Okay, so essentially what may be surprised, what's self-dual variation of calculus? If you take a typical variational problem, how to solve PD variationally, you associate to it a functional, energy functional, and then you try to, is there, I can pinpoint with this, I might, yeah. And then essentially this is an early Lagrange equation, when you say that you'd like to solve this, meaning that you'd like to inverse the gradient of this energy, which is the gradient of a convex function. This is a typical variational problem, and since we are in a convex world today, if phi is convex, usually, if phi is convex, life is very nice, because you can just minimize phi, and you find the critical point, the minimum, and then this is the solution of your equation. Okay, so a typical equation of this sort is when you have divergence of gradient of convex function of gradient of u of x plus f prime of u equal p, f is convex here, and phi is convex. Okay, phi is convex on Rn, so gradient phi gives you a vector field, and you take that. So in particular, if phi is this quadratic, then this is Laplacian. So this is a typical easiest early Lagrange equation that you can deal with. The energy functional then is just this convex function of the gradient plus convex function of u minus this linear function. So everything is convex, life is nice, and you just minimize. Okay, so my talk is really about when some problems are still very convex and yet they're not variational. And here's an example. I killed the variational aspect of this equation by first adding this first order operator. Okay, this first order, so it's a vector field A times the gradient of u. So this is not variational, it's not the derivative of anything. And then here, instead of the gradient of a convex function, I just put any vector field T from Rn to Rn. I would like it to be monotone, okay, because I would like to keep some convexity. Okay, so this is a typical, so I complicated this equation to make it non-variational by adding this term. And what I have been developing in the last few years is a way to deal with this, and I'll tell you a bit about this. So what am I selling today? First, a variation formulation for equations which are not normally early Lagrange. I mean, you cannot associate the energy in a usual way. And essentially, I would like to define a new kind of energy, which VS, something called self-dual Lagrangians. Now, I've done this for a few years as well with my students, and I've written a book about it. I don't know whether I can advertise this book here, but whoever promises to read it, I can give him a copy or her a copy for free. So we need readers. So, and in this book, essentially, it was all about existence and uniqueness, right? So it's just a bunch of examples. Hamiltonian systems, Navier-Stokes, evolution equations, gradient flows, where we just wrote the self-dual Lagrangian formulations, and we proved uniqueness and existence using this approach. That was the book. But now we have to sell the book, so we need to show you that it's useful for something else. So that's what happened in the last couple of years after the book was published, is that we're going to try to show you that this approach is not good for only for existence and uniqueness, but it's good, it's very natural for inverse problems, for control problems, and homogenization. So this is really what I'm up to today. And then, since you're mass transporters, even though no one had managed to transport McCann from his house today, Where's the iron? He just arrived. So I would like to say that I know that you've been extending many things from the affine setting to this, to Wasserstein spaces in terms of calculus of variation. And I think there's a room also to extend this theory from Hilbertian setting, if you will, or linear setting, to Wasserstein space. So I'll end with a problem, but I don't know how to do it. So there's lots of problems there. So this theory is in Hilbert space, or H1, 0, and I think it can be extended to Wasserstein space. So what's a basic example of self-dual variation calculus? So the first two terms, as I mentioned before, this is a typical variational problem. It's a Lagrange equation of a convex functional, which is this. Okay, forget about this term. Okay, so if you want to solve minus Laplace and u plus u to the power p minus 1 equal f, then you consider this functional, which is convex all the way. You minimize it. Good. Now you add this term, what are you going to do about it? So the worst case is when the divergence of A is 0. So it's then what self-dual variation calculus suggests is that you take this function, the original function that you used to play with, psi f u, now complicate it in the following way. Take the Legendre transform of psi. Psi is a function on Sobolev space, H1. You take its Sobolev Legendre transform, psi star, and you apply it to this first order operator, A gradient u. Okay? So this is a new functional now. Now minimize this guy. As opposed to psi, minimize I. And if you minimize I, then you win. You get a solution of this equation. So you found a new functional, a new variational formulation for this equation, even though it's not a Lagrange equation. But what is the trick here? The trick is that when you minimize I, of course, I prime of u is 0, but this is not what really, I prime of the minimum is 0, but that's not what you're looking for. The key here is that the infimum of I is 0. Okay? So I is positive, this functional, and its infimum is 0. But you need to know the infimum of the functional. Not just any infimum, okay? And why is this? Well, convex analysts here, all the experts will know right away what's happening. If you take psi plus psi star, then it's bigger than the cross product. This plus this is bigger than the cross product, which is this. But this cross product is 0 because I assume divergence A is 0. This is Q adjoint operator. This guy is a Q adjoint operator. So this is fine. So my functional, I can subtract this from it because it's 0. But then Legendre duality tells me that this is non-negative. Okay? On the other hand, the limiting case of Legendre duality tells me that if it's 0, this is 0 if and only if P is in the gradient of psi. Okay? So let's write down that this is 0. It means that A gradient U is in the gradient of psi, which is just the old early Lagrange equation, and you're done. So this is really the basic example of dual approach. Okay? New functional. The new functional is non-negative. If you can prove that it's 0, then you're done via the limiting case of Legendre duality. Very, very simple. The key here is how to prove that the infimum is 0. And this is what self-duality is all about. Okay. Now, you could see, what do I mean by self-duality, psi star, all this. It looks self-dual, but how to formalize this? Here we go. I have a background in functional analysis, so I don't want Vitaly Milman to outdo me. I know that he's interested in Legendre transforms these days, in convex analysis. This is one on steroid, Vitaly. So, you have a Banach space X. Say reflexive, Hilbert space, whatever, it's dual X star. I have a Lagrangian on what I call phase space, okay, state space and and it's dual, that's phase space, and they have a function which is convex in both variables. It's very important, and lower semi-continuous. Okay? Now, I call it self-dual if you take its Lejeune transform in both variables. Okay, so it's the Banach space now is X cross X star, is phase space. If you take its Lejeune transform, then it's equal to itself. But notice here you have to switch the arguments P and X, X and P, because the dual of X cross X star is X star cross X. Yeah? So it looks like a Hamiltonian twist, but actually it just comes because the dual of this space is X star cross X. So you have to switch the argument. L star PX is L of XP. So this is it. It's self-dual Lagrangian. Now, if you apply to it Lejeune duality in two variables, you get right away that L of XP is bigger than XP, the cross product. So that's why this, a typical, well, I'll talk about this later. So you can prove easily that this is non-negative if you subtract the cross product. So these are essentially functions of two variables that if you want to complete the square, that means if you want to make them positive, all what you have to do is just to remove the cross product. Typically it's half of x squared plus half of p squared. So the typical self-dual Lagrangian is just half of x squared plus half of p squared. Huh? No, that's the thing. Because if you write, you have to write L of XP plus L star of PX is equal XP plus PX, so twice XP. So you have two from both sides. Okay? You are using it in both variables, right? So the cross product is in both variables, XP, PX. Now, the limited case of Lejeune duality is that if this is zero, but if this is zero, you write down what it means, PX belongs to the gradient of L of XP. Okay, so again, look at this. This is not the typical minimization because you're switching the argument, PX, XP. Okay, so if it's not like zero belongs to the gradient of a convex function. So this is not an Euler Lagrange equation. Now, I claim that many, many, many equations, that's why I wrote a book about them, can be written this way. PX is the gradient of L at XP. Where L is some self-dual Lagrange. Okay, fine, let's talk about the vector fields. Well, what's a vector field? Essentially, if I fix X here, I take all the pieces such that this identity is zero, this is the vector field D bar L. I call it D bar L of X. Okay, all the pieces in the dual such that you have this identity. Okay? So I call this a self-dual vector field if it comes from a self-dual Lagrangian in the following form. Now it looks very, very restrictive, right? So to find a self-dual Lagrangian and then, but surprising that it's a very, very common notion. And then the equations, essentially if you want to talk about vector field, the completely self-dual equation are things that I can write as D bar L, P is equal D bar L, or whatever I wrote here. So this is the same thing here. So what I'm proposing, a new variational calculus, instead of writing here the gradient of an energy functional, writing D bar of some self-dual Lagrangian, where D bar is defined like this. Now, you're all familiar with this. Anybody who did mass transport realizes that this the main interest of convex analysis is that differentiability can be written in this form, right? So instead of writing this, the fact that this is you have an algebraic formula for differentiability for convex analysis. This is how the existence of the Brunier proof of the existence of optimal mass transport, and you have the measure on product space, Rn cross Rn, supported on sets like this. That's how you we proved that it's really the optimal transport is a gradient of a convex function by saying that this product on the product measure lives on essentially such that this is true, right? And this is what I'm suggesting, that this is nothing but a typical self-dual Lagrange. So this is an extension of just this thing. So here are the examples. As I've written now, the typical example is exactly a convex over semi-continuous function. And this is a typical, oops, this phi star of P, not negative P, sorry. Okay? Just P. So that's it. That's by definition the self-dual Lagrange. Okay? In other words, I am trying to extend the theory of completing the squares I'm allowed. I'm 57 years old and can do anything I want. So this is really the if a convex function plus its Legendre dual. But then this is a fancy way of completing the square, the Legendre duality, when you think about it, right? Okay, so here the D-bar and the usual subdifferential are the same. Now, what really makes this thing interesting is that this contains not just convex function, but contains Q adjoint operators, which are exactly the opposite of convex function. Because if you have a self-adjoint positive operator, it is a convex function, right? If A is a self-adjoint positive operator, then half of AXX is convex function. So you have to deal with the part which is not variational, which is when a operator is skew adjoint. And I already gave you an example how it works. So it turned out that if you have an operator which is skew adjoint and phi which is convex function, then this is also self-dual. So you have a notion that contains convex function and skew adjoint operator. And then, what is the D-bar of this? The D-bar of this self-dual Lagrangian is the gradient of a convex function plus the self-dual Lagrangian, plus the skew adjoint operator. So you can add gradient of convex function and skew adjoint operator. Which is really, in PDE, this is a dissipative vector field and the conservative vector field, and you like to add them up, and this is one way to do it. That's why it was pretty fun to develop this calculus, because now these are objects that contain both, and you could see now why one can develop semigroup theory for convex function and semigroup theory for operators, and then Hilly-Yozida theory for convex function and Hilly-Yozida theory for operator. I mean, they're all the same. It's just the same concept. All what you need is develop semigroup theory for self-dual Lagrangian, and then they follow from it. So it's nice on the conceptual level. And as I showed you in the example, if you would like to inverse gamma plus gradient of phi, which is the bar of L, it amounts to minimize L of xp minus xp, which is phi of x plus phi star negative chi minus xp. Okay, so you take this Lagrangian, you remove the cross product, you complete the square. Now it's non-negative. If the infimum is attained, you're done, as I mentioned and I showed you when you have the divergence-free operator. Okay, so this is a variational formulation for if you want to inverse a conservative vector field plus a dissipative vector field, like this. Okay? Okay, so this is, but as I said before, the key is to prove that the infimum is actually zero. There's no reason why the infimum of this is zero. And you have a little theorem that you can prove it. Okay, so you take a self-dual Lagrangian on a space, a little coercivity here, because after all, you want the infimum to be attained. And then the infimum, not only it's attained, which is trivial here, anybody who does convex analysis, But the fact it's zero, it's an interesting phenomenon. That this difference is actually zero. Almost like you complete the square, and you want to solve something. You complete the square, and you say that the square is zero, and you solve it. So, and you can solve many PDEs like this. Okay, so based on this theorem, you can get lots of things. Now, I mentioned to you before that convex functions and then skew adjoint operators. But then there's another theory in the 60s that you all know also, theory of monotone operators, that really was supposed to extend the gradient of convex functions. Okay? Gradient of convex functions are monotones, and Browder and Brzezis and Minty and zillions of people. And they were supposed to extend the typical monotone operator, which is not coming from a potential, is the sum of a skew adjoint operator and a given convex function. And to my big surprise, it turned out that they essentially coincide with maximum monotone operators. So if you have a self-dual Lagrangian, and then this D bar is maximum monotone, this old theory. And vice versa, which is much more important, if you have a maximum monotone operator, then you can associate to it a self-dual Lagrangian for which it is its D bar. So all the theory of maximum monotone operator that people did because they couldn't do things variationally, so they had to develop a whole theory for it, they turn out you can reduce it to convex analysis back again. You take a monotone operator, you can associate the convex function even more. It's a self-dual. And if you want to inverse the monotone operator, it's sufficient to minimize this Lagrangian. It is constructive now, yeah. The first proof I have was transfinite ordinals and stuff like that, whatever Vitaly taught me many years ago. But then now it's constructive. But you have to iterate. Okay? So now, okay, now of course, on one hand, it's disappointing because maximum monotone operators are not in fashion anymore, right? They are bad, they have a bad name. But now, but Brunier is actually rediscovering them, right? They're showing that many hard-looking problems by little, with his tricks, here he managed to find monotonicity and so they are back in many ways, but essentially all the equations that involve monotone operators can be solved variationally in a self-dual way. But also, people who do mass transport should be familiar with this. That's one proof of the mass transport, as I think it's McCann's proof, which is that you prove that you have the optimal transport is something called cyclically monotone. And you have an old theorem for Kafelerer that says a cyclically monotone operator is induced by a convex potential. This is analog. This is any monotone operator is induced by self-dual Lagrangian. So this is an extension of Rockefeller's theorem. Okay, so that's exactly the analog of Rockefeller's theorem for maximum monotone operators. Okay, here you don't get the convex function on the space, but you get it on phase space and self-dual. Okay, so from the functionality point of view, it's very interesting, but also it starts also you start thinking in terms of mass transport when you have measures on the products on phase space, say Rn cross Rn, and you'd like to know which ones are really supported on, not just on these sets, but on sets of the form L of xp minus xp is zero, because this is a more interesting Lagrangian submanifold, Kim, than just the gradient of a convex function, right? That's So I think there is lots for mass transporters to do here, but I don't know how to do it. Okay, so how one can use this to solve equations? For example, have an equation that's given by a monotone operator beta. Okay, so suppose you have an equation. You would like to solve p. You want to inverse a monotone operator beta. That's one. Zillions of equations are like this, right? So I say you associate to beta the self-dual Lagrangian L beta, and then you remove the cross product to complete the square. You have a non-negative functional. You minimize it. You're done. That's how you inverse a monotone operator, variationally, and also of a convex function. Okay, something a bit slightly more complicated. We would like to solve now divergence beta of gain u of u. So this is the equation of the in divergence form. Now, if beta is the gradient of a convex function, you know how to do it variationally. But what about if beta is a general vector field? What do you do? Well, if it's monotone, what I'm saying, you can still do it variationally. You take beta, you associate the as a self-dual Lagrangian L beta associated to it. See, beta here is from Rn to Rn. Vector field from Rn to Rn, beta, right? So you associate to it the self-dual Lagrangians on Rn cross Rn. That's L beta. Now, you associate, so capital L now is a self-dual Lagrangian on, forget about this x here for now, on Rn cross Rn. Then you can lift it to a self-dual Lagrangian on H1 cross H negative 1. What's nice about this notion is that you can lift it to infinite dimensional spaces and everything works the same way. Okay, so you can lift capital L from a Rn cross Rn self-dual Lagrangian to a self-dual Lagrangian on H1 cross H negative 1, H1 times its dual. How? You define like this. You define this. Okay, for U and P given, you define the infimum of all the Fs, L of gradient U times F. Forget about this X, okay, it's confusing. Over all Fs, then divergence of F is equal to P, and you're and this is self-dual Lagrangian. Because it's the case, you can remove the cross product, and you can minimize this. And when you minimize this, you solve this equation. So again, you can solve this equation by minimizing a convex functional on, and proving that the infimum is zero. So these are existence. And uniqueness, if you want, theorems. Now, what I want to get to today is, fine, you have other proofs for these equations, usually fixed points or, I don't know, semi-groups. But what I would like to emphasize that this approach can have applications in anything that deals with inverse problems, control theory, and homogenization. Why? Let's talk about control. In control theory, usually you have a solution and you try to recover the equation, roughly. If the equation is linear or nonlinear, you're trying to recover the coefficient of the equation. And, or so you'd like to recover an equation that gives you a solution which is as close as possible to the one that you started with. So really, your constraint sets are all the solutions of all the possible linearities or nonlinearities of an equation. Okay, and so dealing with a constraint set like this causes a problem. But here I'm saying that this approach can help things in an easy way. For example, here's a simple inverse problem. You have an equation like this. Divergence of some operator gain u equal p. You know u naught. You know a You know the solution. Can you figure out the vector field beta? Why not? That's a nonlinear inverse problem. Okay? You know the solution of this guy? Can you figure out the vector field beta? Of course, you have to specify which class of vector fields, beta matrix or monotone or gradient. But suppose you're looking for among the monotone vector fields beta. So what you do usually, you just use least square approach, right? You say u naught is given. Let's find the u that minimizes this. Among all the possible solutions of such an equation, but among all possible such equations, I mean among all betas also, all possible vector fields and all possible solutions. That's why so least square is simple, but then the constraint set is hard to deal with. But then the crux of this approach is the following. To solve this equation, an equation like this, we associate to it an energy function which is non-negative. And it is zero only when it's a solution of the equation. So these energy functionals are perfect penalty functionals. A penalty functional for any problem like this is something which is positive. It costs you lots of whatever if it's not zero. Okay? So it's a typical penalization. So these all subdual functionals are good penalization functionals. So here's the equation. Here's the solution. I want to do the least square. This is it. But instead of talking about this complicated constraint set, all the possible solutions, all the possible equations, I'm going to add 1 over epsilon to penalize something here. So you could see what is this thing. This is the energy functional associated to the equation, this equation. Okay? So now, instead of dealing with vector field, I'll deal with self-dual Lagrangians. And how do I know that? Because now I know that I can, for every vector field, I can associate self-dual Lagrangian. So I take all the self-dual Lagrangians, okay, who are associated to this class of vector fields that I'm searching for. Okay? So now I have the nice convex class here. Now I minimize not only the square, but penalized for every L. So for every L, for every U, and for every F, I minimize this function on this space. This is a nice space. L is a convex class. This is H1. This is L2. So this is essentially, there's no constraint. So I relax the problem. That's why you use penalization, because instead of using constraint sets, you would like to minimize on the whole space. And the penalization will take care of where you're going to land at the end. So for each epsilon, and this functional is convex in all the variables, in L, U, and F. You minimize, and you get something. But now here's the kicker, is that when epsilon is small, you cannot afford that this, and you're minimizing, you cannot afford that this be to be large. That means this thing has to be zero. And when this is zero, that's exactly what means you found an L and a U that solves exactly your equation. Okay? You found at the same time the vector field and its solution by minimizing this function. And this can be implemented numerically. It's a minimization. So essentially, you're finding this inverse problem, yeah, by a minimization argument and a convex minimization because of that. So that's typical least square. Optimal control. You have the, say, heat equation, okay? and it's driven by this function F. It's a heat source. For each heat source, you have a solution of the heat equation, right? And now what you like is that the heat source costs something. Say it costs this L2 norm squared, okay? Now, you'd like to minimize not only the cost of the heat source, but also you'd like it to the solution you to be as close to a given temperature that you have already decided on. You not. So not only you're minimizing the square, but also the cost of this. Okay. So you'd like to minimize this over all possible solutions of the heat equation. Okay. So here F is the control. Okay. So this is very typical in optimal control, and this approach allows you to do it variationally. Okay, now here, first the heat equation can be obtained by minimizing this function. Now, it looks complicated, but this is a self-dual function on path space. And I'll get back to it at the end to tell you the connection with gradient flows on Wasserstein space. Okay, so this functional, it's a phi, believe it or not, is a self-dual Lagrangian on space of path valued in H1. If you minimize this function and it's zero, then you solve the heat equation. Now, for each F, you have energy like this. For each, okay? So what amounts to now, the control problem minimizes the proximity to U naught plus the cost. So you may want to minimize this plus big penalization here, 1 over epsilon times GF of U, because this GF of U is exactly the self-dual functional, which is non-negative, and it's zero only if you solve the equation. So you reduce this minimization problem to just this optimal control to this minimization of convex function. Plus, you can impress any applied mathematician by writing all these terms. But really, from the functionality point of view, this is really very simple, as I show you. Okay? So this is a homogenization. Same kind of equation. Divergence of beta of gain un is something, is un star. Usually, now here you have a family of vector field that depend on x, right? That depend on the state space. And you assume that it's periodic, okay, on Rn. So it's q-periodic on non-degenerate parallelogram. Okay? So now you have a family of vector fields that are periodic, and you can solve it for each beta. But now you let epsilon go to zero, and homogenization essentially, because of periodicity, you expect that this family of vector fields, when epsilon goes to zero, that is going to be go to a vector field of the same kind, but which is homogeneous in state, in space. See, this is really a typical homogenization problem. Okay, so you solve it for each n, but then when you let epsilon n go to zero, can you find a vector field here, a homogenized vector field? The key is to really find the homogenized vector field, beta. Now, of course, this is very delicate because usually people, when you don't do in a variational situation, you have to use uniform convergence and it's when you're doing with graphs, like monotone graphs, they're delicate estimates. What self-dual calculus tells you is that you can actually define all this variationally. Once you have variational formulation, then you can use gamma convergence, which is much easier to deal with, and you can get the limits in a much easier way. Okay, so that again, the interest of defining things variationally, that's what I'm trying to emphasize. So how to homogenize the family of monotone vector fields? Well, I already showed you how to solve this equation, divergence beta, but I showed it to you when the vector field does not depend on x already. But the same thing works when it depends on x. So for each x, you have a vector field. And for each x, you associate to it a self-dual Lagrangian. But now the self-dual Lagrangian depends on the state. Okay? So now you're not associating a self-dual Lagrangian to only one, to a family. The challenge here, and because it's constructive, you would like to, number one, prove that you can do it measurably, right? Because, I mean, this is depend on x in a, right? So you would like some measurability in x. But also, usually, you have some estimates. You'd like to start with an estimate on beta and translate them into estimates on the self-dual Lagrangians. So lifting, right? You're lifting now a family to a family. So you would like to conserve the estimates, etc. And we looked at what are the estimates. Okay, so the family of monotone operators like this. And usually, what are the estimates that people use when they are doing homogenization is something of that sort. Okay? This is what's needed for homogenization on the family, okay, where eta and psi are on the graph of the vector fields in the family, which depends on omega now. Okay? So you lift this family, and you end up with a family of self-dual Lagrangians. Okay, so for each x, it's self-dual Lagrangian A and B, but then it turned out that this turned out to be just regular LP, LQ estimates on the Lagrangian. So you can lift a family to a family, and you get the and you have this very nice. Okay, so you can now lift a measurable family of self-dual Lagrangians of monotone operator to a measurable family of Lagrangians. Good. So why you want to do this? Because now you can do homogenization. So you lift the family to a family of self-dual Lagrangian, measurable family of self-dual Lagrangian, and then this L family you can lift it to H1 cross H-1, if you will, using this. So now you have a self-dual Lagrangian on phase space. And next step, if you want to do, okay, and then you solve this by minimizing this functional. But as I said before, the only difference between this and before is that now you have dependence on x. But nothing changes besides, I mean, few estimates that you need to lift from beta to L. Okay? So now you have a family of Lagrangian. So for each x, it's a subdual Lagrangian. And you can solve this equation like this. But because now you can solve it like this, now you can have a homogenized vector field. So you start with this homogenization problem with vector fields beta. You associate to them a family of subdual Lagrangians L. And now, from this family of self-dual Lagrangian L, you can define the homogeneized self-dual Lagrangian, just like this. Okay. So L is this family of self-dual Lagrangian that you managed to get, and now you define this self-dual Lagrangian on using this formula. Now W1P is essentially all the periodic, Q periodic function in W1P. And this is it's almost like the Hodge decomposition in the periodic space. Okay? So this gives you the homogeneized subdual Lagrangian. And once you have a homogeneized Lagrangian, then right away you get the D bar of it is a homogeneized vector field. Okay, so you start from a vector field, associate the self-dual Lagrangians, you homogenize the self-dual Lagrangians using this formula, and then you take its d-bar to come back to vector field. So now you have a variation formulation for the homogenized and you have also solutions for each n. So now everything works using gamma conversions if you want to prove that the limit exists. But another option of this is that, you know, for when you are trying to define convergence for functions in general, functionals, you have two. You have Moscow convergence and you have the gamma convergence. I'm not going to go into this functionality. So gamma convergence is usually nice because it uses weak topology. It's like weak convergence for convex functional. Yeah? Moscow is not without the W, yes. This is this thing. You see, it is gamma respectively Moscow, right? It's essentially a difference between strong and weak. Okay, in the here. You see the red, just look at the red things here. Okay? But gamma convergence is nice because it uses weak topology.
And Moscow opposite is strong topology.
No, but it's in the hypothesis, you see. In gamma convergence, you assume strong in the hypothesis. And the Moscow convergence, you assume weak in the hypothesis. So Moscow is stronger than gamma. Moscow is stronger than gamma. People like to have gamma because of the weak compactness usual thing, right? But Moscow is nicer because, why? We have many reasons for Moscow is nicer. We like it because what? One of them is that if a bunch of convex functions converge Moscow, then the Legendre transform converge Moscow. See, that's one of the things, right? What's amazing for this set of Lagrangian is that they're equivalent. The two notions, Moscow convergence and gamma convergence, are equivalent provided the limit is set in the realm of set of Lagrangian. So it's life is much nicer. You don't have all this complication and all these notations, and I never understood anyway. Okay? So this simplifies life a little bit. And, yeah. Five more minutes. Oh, I can do lots of things. Usually when you deal with convergence of graphs, monotone vector field, you have to deal with this kind of convergence. Kuratovsky, Penlevé, right? You have to... When you're dealing with convergence of graphs to graphs, right? And that's what you usually do when you don't have variational formulation. I mentioned this because now you can prove that if you have gamma convergence for the Sergio Lagrangian, this is implies what do I call the other one? Graph convergence. Graph convergence for its DBA. So you can see the relationship between the gamma convergence of Sergio Lagrangian and the graph convergence of the vector field that you can associate with. So you can prove that this is continuous essential. Okay? So that's why everything clicks. And whatever I promised is complicated formula for the heat equation that I gave you before, and right, it's really a particular case of what you can do about when you have a gradient flow. So you have a gradient flow where phi is a convex function starting at V naught. You know that this is, by definition, this is not a variational problem. You don't get it by, it's not an early Lagrange equation. And this is all this originated by an idea of Brazis and Eklund in 76, that they proposed a variational formulation for gradient flow. But they couldn't prove whatever they want to prove because the function that they proposed was not really complete, it needed to be self-dualized, which I eventually did much later, in 2000, with a student of mine, Leo Tzu, 2003, 2004. Okay, but they had the essential idea. So you want to solve this variationally. What do? You take phi, See, typical phi for the heat flow is really clear in this case. You take the convex function phi at u of t, and then you take a Sergeant transform, apply it to minus u dot. But now you see why. I mean, u dot is essentially skew adjoint, almost skew adjoint, right? U dot, if it wasn't for the boundary condition, okay? A u dot is zero, but almost. You have some boundary terms. So you have to fix this. You have to fix the boundary terms of u dot by adding this boundary Lagrange. Okay, v naught is the initial condition, and you add this convex function here. It looks complicated, but it's a very nice self-dual function. Okay, there's lots of self-duality here in terms of convex analysis. Yeah. So this Lagrangian little L is the sum of these four terms, 1, 2, 3, 4, this little L of. So this is, you could see that this is self-dual, and I added some boundary term to make the whole thing self-dual. But now, so this is the self-dual form of my functional. Now, why is it nice? Because look, if you replace, now let's subtract and add u u dot, because I want to make this positive. You take the cross product, phi plus phi star, subtract the u u dot. But so this is u u dot, it's these two terms. When you combine these two terms with the Lagrangian that I gave you, then not only you completed the square inside, but you completed the square on the boundary. So whatever is needed to complete the square inside was exactly enough to complete the square on the boundary. So now the self-dual form of the function is this, but this function is positive because of this. So if the infimum is zero, you're done. U of naught is V naught, and this term is zero. If this term is zero, that means negative U dot is in gradient phi of V, okay, if this term is zero. So you can solve the heat equation by minimizing this self-dual functional, which is non-negative using this. So this is what I showed you when I was doing optimal control for the heat flow. Okay, but this comes from here. I decided to finish with this because I conjecture there is an analog of this in the Wasserstein space. At least this. Heat flow in Wasserstein space. There is a subduality there that needs to be worked. I haven't succeeded in doing this. And so for people who so you would like to define a formula like this in Wasserstein space. I say phi, the typical energy functional on Wasserstein space, right? It's rho log rho, right? It's so you have a notion of geodesically convex function. But now, what is the Lejeune transform on Wasserstein space? The Lejeune transform is, the easiest way to do it is to lift the convex functional to the tangent space via the Brunier map. Now you'd like the lifting via the Brunier map to tangent space to be convex in order to use a classical. But then, for the lifting of a function, of an energy function on a tangent space to be convex, that's exactly the convexity notion that Ambrosio and the book of Ambrosio and the three Italians, right, identified. That's what they needed to resolve the gradient flow. Geodesically convex is not enough. You needed a stronger notion, which is really, when you think about it, it's a notion of convexity on the tangent space. Okay, after you lift the functional via the Brunier map. So now you can define the dual of this. You can define, of course, u dot. They wrote a book on this. So this term is defined. Boundary terms are more complicated. You cannot add and subtract easily. So fine, you jump to this. You just jump to this with now, you put the Wasserstein distance here between U of naught and V naught square. Okay? So this term, you can, this function, you can write on Wasserstein space. And I think it will be a very interesting exercise to prove that the infimum is zero under the appropriate hypothesis. Because one would have really discovered what's really self-duality in Wasserstein space, what it really means. And I think it's there, but just a wild conjecture. Thank you very much.